Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Get ready for Mind Shock with Dr. Ron Dalrymple. The premier podcast in the world, bringing you hidden truths about your mind's incredible powers. Get ready to free your mind.
Hello, folks. Welcome to Mind Shock, Dr. Ron Dalrymple, the show that is determined to help us all open our minds to higher levels of thought and realization and being. I began this journey many, many years ago. When I was a child, I remember one time I was 4 years old, sitting on the milk box. This is back in the 1950s. We're talking about eons ago. And they had milk boxes. This guy would drive around in a milk truck and drop off bottles of milk to your house. Believe it or not, to your front door. They sit in this metal milk box and sit on the inside. And so I sit there at times as a little kid, you know, looking up in the sky, just wondering, what's the purpose of life? And I had this, like, tremendous thought hit me that, you know, we're all destined upon this planet to do great things. All of us have great things to do. Lives have a great purpose. All of us are here to achieve great things. And so I always kind of looked at the world that way. Trying to find what is our purpose. And then I went to work at NASA at 17 years old. At 19, I made a discovery that kind of changed my point of view on science and still scares a lot of people. And that is that if indeed we're not just in a three-dimensional world, but an n-dimensional world, that if, you know, since we're all energy, we know we're energy in terms of Einsteinian physics, quantum physics, we're energy beings inside the physical body, we'll suppose that the mind itself is not just biochemicals and a subset of the brain. What if the mind transcends the brain as an energy field? Now, if you explain the mind as an energy field, how would you do that? That's what we did in our book called Quantum Field Psychology, which I published in 2004. We made a film called The Endless Question, which is about that same topic, to try to make it more simple. And that was done. Quantum Field Psych was published 20 years ago, and then 10 or 12 years ago, we got to work on making the film, Endless Question. We have more books coming out about this topic. It's very important that we all understand that we're here upon Earth for a reason. Everybody has a great purpose to achieve in life. And we've been talking about the history of various people in history who made a huge difference. People of so-called genius who helped change the world because they had visionary ideas and thoughts and creations and so forth. One thing we've discovered in researching this is that the power of love is greatly involved in the evolution of genius, or it might be the suppression of love in some cases. When people get stepped on, beat upon, abused in childhood, we talked about a number of gifted people who went through a horrible childhood and yet came out of it creating tremendous things in life. So a child who is loved versus a child who is not loved turn out very different. Now, it doesn't mean they can't change things and transform themselves, which is what, you know, psychotherapy is all about. I've been doing, you know, psychotherapy with folks for many, many decades now. And that's the whole purpose, is transformation of consciousness to a higher level of thought, overcoming our problems, our fixations, our delusions, whatever they might be. I've worked in many places over the years as a consultant, more recent years, in various types of facilities. And it always amazes me that people get confused in various ways and create various mental fixations held in place by emotional fixations as well. In case Freud made a comment about this, he said, a man or woman, a person who has been the indisputable favorite of their mother keeps for life the feeling of a conqueror. Think about that. The feeling of a conqueror. You need various examples of great leaders and whatnot, such as Patton, whose mother, you know, was closely associated with him when he was in college and so forth. And also FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. That some of these great leaders, brilliant people, well, and there are many examples of this, and a great way to look at it, but they often had a very powerful mother behind them, lifting them up, buoying them up. also been said that behind every great man is a great woman. I know that is true in many cases, that the choices we make in life, if you have somebody in your life path, beautiful woman too. Behind every great woman is a great man, right? They're great people holding each other up in various ways to support them. In case that mother's love is very powerful because women have very, very powerful hearts. They have a natural inclination towards love. Their love nature is enormously powerful. And unfortunately, it's gotten knocked off course in the last half a century or so by very shady characters who have convinced women that being angry and resentful and vindictive towards men is somehow a blessing, which it is not. Of course, fighting for freedom and justice is absolutely verifiable. I mean, that's what we all need to do is be free. But turning one sex against the other in a war is nothing but damage. The whole goal, I would say, is to create harmony for men and women working harmony together to find some peaceful ground in between. We can work together as one team, within one entity in terms of thoughts and emotions. Fighting each other, sabotaging each other helps no one. Now, Bacon and Newton were rejected by their mothers and had very difficult lives. We talk about Sir Francis Bacon, who helped transform the world. And of course, Isaac Newton did the same thing. Remember, Bacon's mother was Queen Elizabeth I, who denied she was his mother because she pretended to be the Virgin Queen. That was her persona, the Virgin Queen. Because if she admitted that she had had a husband, Robert Dudley, that she would have to give up the crown. That he would take the crown if somebody else would because of the gender bias of the day. So she kept up the facade of being the Virgin Queen, denying the fact she had two sons, Francis Bacon, and younger brother Robert Devereux. In any case, Bacon suffered from this greatly because he was denied by his own mother. She admitted when he was 15 that he was her son. And then she sent him to Paris for 3 years to get him out of the court because a big blow-up led to the revelation. In any case, she was later denied the crown when she died in 1503. So this great person who, according to many sources, is a true author of Shakespearean plays, who created a scientific method in 1620 with Novum Organum, he and his writing group translated all the great works of the world from Latin and Greek into English and then disseminated throughout the world with the Gutenberg Press, developed in 1445, which his grandfather, Henry VIII, at first used to disseminate his ideas in his days of rule over England and other countries. In any case, Bacon's influence upon the world was profound in many, many ways. But he was knocked out and blocked from office because his enemies, who were backed by the old infamous banking cartels, members of the banking cartels around for actually thousands of years, going back with evidence that even goes back to the times of Caesar, before that, that Babylonian-style banking, which is very corrupt and basically loans out money worth nothing and then charges interest for it to bankrupt the people, has been used by these dark forces for thousands of years in different civilizations, just like it's being used now. In any case, these same dark forces blocked Sir Francis from the crown. Instead of giving it King James, who's James VI of Scotland, became James I of England in 1603, and he brought all kinds of supposedly debauchery with him in a total mess, which then allowed the manipulators behind the scenes to take over the kingdom step by step. They executed Charles I in 1647, who wanted to destroy the monarchy in England, and give power to their parliament, much easier to control, because the elected officials could be manipulated, bought, and paid for, whereas monarchs tend to want to keep their power because they thought it came from divine rights and so forth. In any case, by 1688, the so-called English Revolution was effected, taking over the Parliament of England and thereby affecting control by the banking cartel. So by 1694, the Banking Act was passed, creating a monetary system totally controlled by the bankers of the government. The same bankers control these systems today, believe it or not. In any case, at that time, they robbed the country of the wealth, similar to the Federal Reserve Act of 1913 in the U.S. Same manipulation was done here. Years later, they created a system where private banks control our banking system. Private bankers, folks, not the U.S. government. Private bankers control it. They manufacture money out of thin air, loan to us through bonds and so forth, and we pay them back the interest they create with massive, massive taxation. So they created the Tax Act, same year, 1913, to the IRS to rob us blind of our assets. So if you wonder why the country's going broke, why the rich keep getting richer and the poor get poorer, that's why. It's all a huge manipulation by these manipulative parasites. In any case, Bacon was a tremendous influence in his world, could help change the world, but he's blocked by these dark forces. Now, Newton Frederick Newton was similarly rejected by his mother. He left him for years with her parents, which made him fairly rejected. What happened was his father died in one of the wars of the day, and so she married a minister and left him with her parents for a number of years, and she went and had three more children by her next husband. He was left alone. He felt rejected. He was a woman. When we talked about the type of disruption early in childhood can produce personality disorders or other types of diagnoses. When they lose a parent early in childhood, they feel rejected, they feel abandoned, they feel lost in life, they aren't sure who they are. We'll get back to that later on. It's also parallel, as we mentioned before, Eric Clapton, whose mother gave him to his grandparents and basically threw him away later, twice denying him, denying he was her son. He was this great guitar genius, menace musician, until he changed the world of music of his day by combining rock and blues, so creating a whole new style, a whole new form. He's still alive today in the Caribbean. He has a place down there, which I visited a couple of years ago. He has a place called the Crossroads where they do rehabilitation for people with addictions. He says, his mother threw him away. He felt tremendously rejected. He felt lost. This drove him into his music. He expressed himself through his music. For example, he had a girlfriend early on, and she'd say something to him, and he didn't know how to speak out his words, what he felt, so he'd play music. He'd blast a riff at her, right? Play something back at her. She'd go, what does that mean? He'd play something else at her, you know, which expressed his feelings. In any case, he became great at what he did in his drive to find himself or maybe to find love. But perhaps he's trying to get the whole world to love him, right, because he felt rejected in childhood and unloved. So this might also have been driven some of the behavior of these people who were quite brilliant, driving relentlessly at their professions to achieve a higher level, to get something back in the world. Remember also the power of the heart we talked about. The heart is very, very powerful. We're just now starting to learn more about it. It's a very powerful energy system. The average heart emits 20 photons per second, whereas a healer's heart gives off 100,000 photons per second. Think about that. 100,000 photons per second. A photon is a particle of light, which light travels in waves through space, interacts with matter as particles or photons. In the case of a healer's heart, is enormously powerful. That's why a highly advanced healer can touch somebody or think about somebody and project energy to them to help heal them. The heart has great powers we do not yet understand, which moves into the spiritual domain. And many will deny this. Those who think three-dimensionally, of course, will deny it. I've been a psychologist for many years now, many decades, and I've seen so many patients over the years who had their heart stepped on, broken, ignored, damaged in some way. In fact, many of the diagnoses you see, they're unloved, rejected, neglected, which causes them great emotional damage. They're often abused in childhood. It might be verbal, emotional, physical, sexual abuse. They feel horribly plundered by other people, abused and abandoned, perhaps neglected, or abused by one, neglected by the other. So this creates tremendous disruption. And at the core of the mind, or the nucleus of the mind, you could say, is the self-image and the self-esteem. The self-image are the thoughts, the constellation of thoughts we have about who we are, how we see ourselves. Now, we think other people see us, which may not be true at all. They might see us differently. And also how we feel about ourselves, our self-esteem. These are really key to developing balanced mental health. So, again, self-image, self-esteem are key, a big part of the nucleus. It profoundly affects how you evolve after that point. It's in the very first days, weeks, months of life. This is developing. So the next level beyond that nucleus of self-esteem and self-image, we could say is trust versus mistrust. Does a person trust the world or not trust the world? Do they trust themselves or not trust themselves, right? So do they have faith in themselves? Do they believe in themselves or not? Or do they believe in somebody else? And how this distributes in personality in various ways determines what's called the different personality disorders. These are, we see these in psychotherapy all the time. They are really a substrate of a setting in psychotherapy. What you see in private practice especially is underlaying these disorders. So a person learns to trust or mistrust themselves or trust or mistrust others. Now, lack of trust causes many psychological problems, right? Or too much trust makes a person codependent and attached to somebody in a way, trusting somebody blindly, which then goes awry as well. Now, beyond the level of trust versus mistrust, is control versus discontrol. Can a person control their world or not? By influencing the people around them or not? Right? Or are they overly controlled by somebody else? For example, you might see some paranoid people, like adulthood, somebody who's paranoid personality disorder, my five very well within some kind of bureaucratic structure, hiding their true nature, but kind of like nibbling their way around and so forth. I really lack love in childhood, don't trust other people, have a lot of anger inside and lash out at times, like paranoia because they were abused and mistreated. And that's a hard one to deal with because they often deny it and won't work with it. In the case of people with a lack of security and also a lack of sense of competence, self-competence. The highest levels evolve, the person again determines their personality or personality disorders or other diagnoses. Now let's go back to Newton. One of his enemies, he believed, later in life was Robert Hooke. Remember now he was rejected by his mother. He thought his father died early on. He felt abandoned in life. Wasn't sure who he was. He was quite brilliant in school. Of course, his teachers and mentors were amazed how smart he was. They promoted him through the grades and whatnot. He eventually got a scholarship to go to Cambridge. The story there is that his mother had the money, and she'd acquired money from both her husbands, and she was wealthy for her day, but she wouldn't help him out. She wouldn't pay for him going to school for whatever reason. So he was trying to go to Cambridge, which, remember, had been founded by Henry VIII, right? The grandfather of Bacon, interesting, right? In any case, his mentors recognized his brilliance, so they got him a scholarship there, but he had to work his way through. And in those days, what they used was a privy for a bathroom, where they'd go into like a structure and whatnot, and just basically do a number one or number two into a bowl of some type, and he had to carry them out. He had to carry the bowls outside and dump them somewhere. You can imagine his humiliation. You're the brilliant person, one of the smartest people in the world who ever lived, really, or was he know on planet Earth, who had to empty out toilets for his rich other classmen, who were more wealthy than he was, would laugh at him, make fun of him, and humiliate him. You can imagine he developed this problem of humiliation. So early in life, he was rejected by his mother, felt abandoned, felt neglected, rejected. And brilliant people are also very highly sensitive. They're also very highly intuitive. They have deep, deep feelings. They probably can't express them because they aren't sure. They've been abused and mixed up. But he held those inside. So later in his scientific career, he got involved with other people debating various issues, reacted, showing that early life paranoia and anger and so forth. So he got into it with Robert Hooke, who was one of the leaders of the Royal Society of the day, back then Royal Society, the leading scientific organization in England, and for much of Europe, really, highly respected. In any case, he did some work, Newton did some work on optics, and Hooke basically trashed the work. He wrote a condescending critique of his unknown upstart, right? Which his ego, I'm sure, got into it. It was this new guy coming along, trying to sound like a professional or an expert on optics, when Hooke was the expert, according to him. One can understand how the critique would have annoyed a normal person, right? But in Newton, he set off a flaming rage. He wanted to publicly humiliate Hooke, right? He wanted to get even. He was, in fact, quite irrational about it. He was unable to deal with criticism in a balanced, in a relaxed kind of way. He didn't really believe himself enough, didn't have that self-image, self-esteem we talked about. He had a lot of fear of being humiliated again, like he was in college, like he was in childhood when he felt abandoned. Listen, you're submitting this paper, you're so unsettled about a given take that you're discussing, he withdrew into virtual isolation. Where, again, he worked on his own projects, his own designs and whatnot, but alone, avoiding other people. We talked before that it might have been true of a borderline personality disorder, or perhaps he's a male borderline. Borderlines have, of course, the core of life, a sense of rejection, abandonment, humiliation from early life. Don't trust other people. They have massive mood swings, often paranoia, often narcissism, a lot of anger. They can be very explosive. They can have massive, massive mood swings. They can go from 180 to 360 to back to 180, back to zero, whatever. They go all over the place with emotions. They can also be a bipolar along the way. So they might have these big, long mood swings. Along the mood swings are these very rapid oscillating moods as well, the borderline aspect. They're really very, very difficult people to deal with in many cases. So he'd react with rage towards somebody who disagreed with him. He felt rejected and abandoned. It brought forth all that anger from childhood, all this humiliation from college, right? It's stepped on by the more wealthy kids. So he also had got into it at one point with English Jesuits in Liege, where he was discussing colors with these folks, debating the issue. And again, their objections were relatively shallow, but he reacted with fury. He lashed out with tremendous rage because any criticism he took as a vital attack against his person. So this correspondence dragged on until 1678, when eventually he gave a final shriek of rage, as it were, and then he had a total nervous breakdown, followed by silence. So and his mother died the next year, which also sent him deeper into isolation. His mother had been an anchor denied to him. You know, usually the mother is a very, very powerful emotional being, of course, in the family. In this case, she was, but not for him. She didn't give him the love he wanted. You know, most certainly, of course, get growing up. He felt the pain about her, like she did, but he rejected him. So he was bereft in that sense. So he had this deep, deep hole inside him that couldn't be filled. So when she died, the whole issue could not be resolved either. She was gone. It was over, right? That crushed him as well. And for 6 years, he withdrew intellectual interchange with other people. Definitely started some correspondence, but he tended to break it off very quickly, right? Because he couldn't handle it. Again, he might well have been a male borderline suffering from abandonment issues and rejection syndrome. While undergoing massive emotional shifts, he did produce incredible leaps in science. He was a brilliant scientist. One account is that he concentrated for long periods of time with very deep concentration. And the realization here is that deep concentration could open up for you tremendous corridors, the ability to concentrate, focuses the mind and the energy of the mind in a way, in a pinpoint way, kind of like a laser effect of concentration, which helps a person create new things and make new discoveries. So like Tesla would also do this, go into deep concentration. And like Bacon, so these news. Well, folks, talking today with Ron Dalrymple and Mind Shock about the role of love, the role of love in the evolution of genius and creativity. Got a lot more coming, folks. We'll be right back with our sponsors.
This show is brought to you by BarkBox, free box to all listeners of Mind Shock. Go to BarkBox.com/MindShock. Do you ever wonder how the mind works? The Endless Question, a film by Dr. Ron Dalrymple, shows you a new theory of mind, one that bridges the road between spirituality and science while revealing to you the laws of creativity, things that can open up your mind to limitless possibilities. It is literally a theory that changes everything. And once you know it, you can apply it to your own life. View The Endless Question for free on Amazon Prime. The Endless Question on Amazon Prime.
ASMC, the premier German company that supplies everything for adventure, from outdoor clothes to outdoor gear, even backpacks. Lots of quality and lots of specials. To start your adventure, go to HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on ASMC.
Paradise Found, 2015, is a film that sparks of intrigue about the discovery of quantum field psychology. Throw in a sexy spy story, a conflict between father and son against the backdrop of NASA, and interspersed with World War II flashback combat scenes, and you'll be surprised to discover the foundation of a whole new theory of mind. Rent or buy Paradise Lost, 2015, at Amazon.com, and prepare for the explosive conclusion. That's Paradise Lost, 2015. At Amazon.com.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
A complete mind development course, The Inner Manager by Dr. Ron Dalrymple, helps you develop your concentration, memory, imagination, and more, all to help you program your mind towards success. But it's not a boring read. You are taken on a journey with a young man who is trying to start his own business and immerses himself into a journey of self-discovery. A powerful book that you can read again and again. Get The Inner Manager by Dr. Ron Dalrymple at Amazon.com. The Inner Manager at Amazon.com. Remember, positive impact. www.healthylife.net.
Folks, welcome back. Dr. Ron Dalrymple and Mind Shock. Talk about the power of love and the evolution of genius and really higher levels of consciousness. The power of love is greatly underestimated. Now, I wouldn't say understand that because they tie into love much more powerfully and feel their emotions powerfully and feel love very, very powerfully. You know, the mother's love can heal a child, raise a child, create very powerful bonds, create very powerful effects if used in a very positive way. If not used in a positive way, it can also be very destructive. For example, a female borderline can be very, very destructive with massive mood swings, mood changes, very destructive effects on people around her and so forth. In any case, the power of love and the evolution of genius is really very interesting. So we talked about the influence of love or lack of love with a number of characters such as Bacon, Newton, and also Tesla. Tesla would also go into deep concentration. Tesla now was loved by his mother. Very, very interesting. His mother loved him very much, and he had a close bond with her. And they're also very intuitive back and forth. For example, when she was dying, in the 40 days of telephones and telegraph, that he invented, remember, some of his, he invented wireless, right? Not Marconi. One of his sources, Marconi, let's say, borrowed the company. He attempted to develop initially, perhaps to communicate with his mother and others. When he left Europe and came to the U.S., that he had very powerful intuition that she was dying. So he sailed over to Europe, to Serbia, right, to see her, and got there just before she passed away. It is a very, very powerful bond. She also taught him how to think creatively. She was a very creative person. Wasn't formally educated, but very, very brilliant person in her own creativity. Taught him how to think in a creative way. So Tesla would also consult his muse like Bacon, would consult his muse and whatnot. Also how he discovered quantum field psychology by deep concentration, not really meaning to. I'm just some kid studying math and physics at a young age and really fascinated by it, and then got into studying psychology. It's all kinds of correlations that he explained the theories of psychology with math and physics, especially topological mathematics, quantum physics, and calculus. In any case, you might want to check out quantum field psychology, The Endless Question. They're on Amazon. They're all about creating the power of the mind. There's a scientific basis to know that the mind is an energy field. It makes perfect sense to understand that, which is a whole new direction in science. It changes everything about the world of psychotherapy, the mind and so forth, psychiatry. So current approaches of medication and whatnot, and will probably, I think, fade away. We use some in some cases, but will largely disappear and be replaced by energy medicine and by super positive thinking and so forth, super positive psychology and other applications of mind as energy. That's the future. What we see now is like the dinosaur, which is going to be passing away. In any case, back to Newton, he produced the mechanics of the Principia, which is an exact quantitative description of the motions of visible bodies. They're really, really quite brilliant. So he studied the stars, say the heavens, and so he studied the planets and the motion of planets and whatnot, and described them with mathematics. So, for example, body remains in a state of rest, which is compelled to change that state by force impressed on it. The change in motion proportional to the force impressed. Right? These are laws of motion. Right? That to every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Now, we found correlated to this also in quantum field psychology. We cover some of this in one of other books called The Inner Manager, talking about the physics of the mind and how it plays out and so forth in various ways. It's certainly true that what you think about, what you dwell upon, tends to come upon you, and how you influence other people also rebounds back to you. So we create our own reality constantly, often not realizing. There's all kinds of laws that pertain to the mind, such which we're just now discovering, which have been there, of course, since the beginning, and are meant for us to uncover, I'm sure. These concepts of parallels to the mind, again, as you'll see in quantum field psychology. Now, each creative person creates in part what they have fixated inside them, fixated upon. What you fixate upon, what you dwell upon, creates various lenses of perception. Invisible projections. So what you think about, what you dwell upon, you constantly create these lenses inside of you, these belief systems, the various thoughts, crystallized thoughts that they become, held in place by strong emotions like magnetic fields. So what you believe, what you tend to repeat, what you tend to command forth, what you're creating in your life, whether you realize it or not. So that's why so many people have such different beliefs and they're all certain they're right. So you might have 10 people, for example, watch an accident occur, you get exactly 10 different opinions, right? About what happened, all of them different. That's why people can argue with each other to infinity and never convince each other that they're right. Nobody wants to believe it. They want to believe they're right, right? Each person has their own point of view. We're all quite sure of because that's how we see it. There's a great fallacy here in a sense is that it comes to what's called the self-fulfilling prophecy. What you believe in, you tend to create and it bounce back to you and reassures you you're right in the first place. In fact, you may not have been. In any case, we create our own lenses of perception and projection, we project onto the world around us. And that's explained in quantum psychology by topological mathematics, by into and onto projections, but it's basically what's called, pardon the terminology, but surjective versus injective projections from one space to another. So you can explain the mechanics of the mind, how the mind works as energy, with mathematical systems, which is really very, very interesting. So we see what we believe to be true, whether it is or not. We create what we project from inside ourselves, combined with what we study and analyze all the time. So being a polymath, it seems you study all kinds of things, constantly opens new worlds. So being a polymath means you might study one field entirely as best you can, learn all its basic functions and properties and how it all works. You apply it to some other field you study with equal intensity, see the connections between them, so you draw corollaries. That's how great discoveries are often made. In any case, be a polymath, you're going to read, study all the time, learn new things every day, keep your mind open, be flexible, never assume you know everything because you don't. You want to have very strong self-esteem and high self-confidence, but also be humble. Very important to always be humble and know there's so much more to learn waiting for us. This means new discoveries of incredible things. Now, another great creator of history is Michelangelo in the Sistine Chapel for 3 months around the clock. Now, I visited there back in 2004, the same year, in fact, it was the same month they wrote Quantum Field Psychology, interestingly enough. It was April, I was there of 2004, and I visited the chapel, and it's really, really very beautiful. The work he did up on the ceiling and whatnot and the upper walls is really amazing. He set up on scaffolding up there, laid upon it, for months while his assistants brought him food and water and whatever, and so I guess took all the products down the ladder as well, right? But he didn't sleep a whole lot. He would, like, basically work around the clock and sleep for, like, 15, 20 minutes every 3 or 4 hours, which we can do. Now, some speculate he's bipolar, which he might have been, a manic state. Maybe put himself into that state. Some folks can do that, perhaps, by working their frenzy. The case produces incredible, incredible artwork. He's born in 1475, 1564, contemporary with some of the other folks we've talked about. He sleep every 4 hours, 15 minutes, like I said, then would paint again. In his lifetime, he was known as Il Divino, the Divine One, because his work was so brilliant, so incredible. Contemporaries admired his terribilita, his ability to instill a sense of awe in viewers of his art, right? The viewers were amazed by how brilliant he was. It's like when Clapton plays music, you can't believe how good it is. It's like note perfect, pitch perfect, incredible. Or the creations of Tesla. Tesla would visualize an engine he was building in his mind, work on for months in his mind's eyes, or and keep changing it and creating it until it ran perfectly. He then observed a friction upon it, see there's no friction. He produced it in the physical world and made exactly what he saw in his mind's eye and it ran perfectly. Whereas Edison and others were like through trial and error. Or Mozart, another great genius, could also tap into this higher level of thought. He created an entire symphony in a very short period of time. So you could hear the notes in his mind's ear. Okay, folks, talking today, Dr. Ron Dalrymple on Mind Shock. But the power of love, the evolution of the entire state of consciousness. Back in a moment, folks, a word from our sponsors.
Here's a fun, stimulating program that can teach you how to develop your own powers of creation. It uses a three-part mind, stimulating approach to get you to develop your own creative thinking. It will help you create a powerful self-image and helps you see how you can take creative action. You'll develop your thinking power and your skills, and you can do this in 8 days. Get Dr. Ron Dalrymple's book, 8 Days to Creative Power, on Amazon.com. Overcome your problems with the step-by-step guide. So get 8 Days to Creative Power on Amazon.com.
Get high-quality glasses, sunglasses, and prescription lenses at eyeglasses.com. Choose from over 250,000 items and 400 brands. Already have frames? Get replacement lenses. It's easy. Go to our advertiser page and click eyeglasses.com.
A complete mind development course, The Inner Manager by Dr. Ron Dalrymple, helps you develop your concentration, memory, imagination, and more. All to help you program your mind towards success. But it's not a boring read. You are taken on a journey with a young man who is trying to start his own business and immerses himself into a journey of self-discovery. A powerful book that you can read again and again. Get The Inner Manager by Dr. Ron Dalrymple at Amazon.com. theinnermanager@amazon.com.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
Do you ever wonder how the mind works? The Endless Question, a film by Dr. Ron Dalrymple, shows you a new theory of mind, one that bridges the road between spirituality and science while revealing to you the laws of creativity, things that can open up your mind to limitless possibilities. It is literally a theory that changes everything, and once you know it, you can apply it to your own life. View The Endless Question for free on Amazon Prime. The Endless Question on Amazon Prime.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Hello, folks. Welcome back. Dr. Ron Dalrymple, my mind's Chuck. Talking today about the incredible power of love, the evolution of genius and divine consciousness. Now, again, Michelangelo was called Il Divino, the Divine One. You ever seen the statue David, which I saw when I was in Verona, that same year, 2004, it is 20 feet tall, cut from a single stone. So think about this. You got a huge single stone of marble, right? This massive stone. Made this incredible statue out of it, showing the veins, you know, in the body and whatnot, and the knuckles and so forth, and just unbelievable detailing, which he studied human bodies for. Right? He had to do various things to study cadavers in those days to make sure that the sculptures were just right. So the detailing is totally amazing, absolutely amazing. Attempts by other artists to imitate expressive style gave to rise what's called mannerism, a short-lived movement in Western art, after the High Renaissance. In any case, more background. His family had been small-scale bankers in Florence for a number of years, but they eventually went broke. The bank failed. His father, a government post in Caprice, where Michelangelo was born, at the time of his birth, his father was the town's judicial administrator. His mother was descended from a very famous woman, who quite a brilliant creator. Well, it was never quite confirmed, but Michelangelo believed it. He was a very creative person, a strong influence upon his life. Again, the power of love. He was a great leader in her time, which gave him an anchor to admire, right? To admire his love upon her. Now, after his birth, his family returned to Florence, where he was raised, and later on his mother had a prolonged illness, and she died in 1481 when he was just 6 years old. So again, we see disruption in childhood of the love connection to the mother, right? The love bond was broken with Michelangelo, like it was with other great people in history, which perhaps gave him his driving force to succeed in life, perhaps be loved by the whole world, to replace the powerful love he had for his mother, Michelangelo. But the powerful love she gave him, even that sense of self-esteem and self-image at a young age, right? So then he went to live with a nanny and her husband, a stonecutter, in a nearby town, and there he gained his love for marble. Right, so it had a very interesting twist. He lost the love connection with his mother, but he was introduced to marble, which was part of his life's work. So, for a short time, he studied Cramer, the famous humanist back then, but he had no interest in school. Like many great people, hate traditional schooling because it's very boring, it's very slow. It's designed for the average student, and the gifted student is bored to death. That's why they started creating G&T programs a number of decades ago, right? To try to accommodate those who are much quicker, much smarter in terms of IQ tests and whatnot. There's also IQ versus EQ, emotional intelligence, and also CQ, creative intelligence. We do it in some of our work. We talk about that. But it's often true of genius. They hate traditional schooling. Thomas Edison had 3 months of school. It's been a good comment in life. When he hired people, he give them a test. Or before he hired them, he give them a written test, a bunch of questions on it, you know, like, what is the capital of Zanzibar, and things like this, and you know, what is this, and what. That's really tough questions to see if they're readers, they're good students of the world and so forth, how they can calculate things. And he had at one point a group of some 200 people working for him in Orange, New Jersey, his laboratory there. Many of the inventions came from the people who worked for him, which he, of course, patented and then benefited from. In any case, see, Florence in times of Michelangelo was the greatest center of the world for arts and learning. So sponsored by the town council, the British Merchant Guild, and also by the Medici family and their banking association. The Medici's were a key component in the international banking cartel in those days in that area. Very, very powerful bankers, part of the long line of bankers. And what they would do is they'd support these very great artists and scientists, whatever, give them funding because they had no funding otherwise. They're doing research and whatnot, creating new things for the world. So they benefit or be benevolent towards the world in some respects by helping them out, but also take credit for it, of course. The Renaissance, a renewal of classical scholarship in the arts, has first flowered in Florence in the early 15th century. That means the 1400s. So a long time ago. New Renaissance came out after the Dark Ages and whatnot, suppression of the church and so forth. You want to break free and start creating new things. We're seeing that in the world today. Another type of Renaissance, breaking free of the enslavement, the mind enslavement of the media and whatnot. Again, the types who want to understand three-dimensionally, understand our true origins, who we really are as creative people. In fact, Michelangelo is featured in a book called The Agony and Ecstasy in a film you might have seen, which showed him in struggles in life and whatnot as a painter, sculptor, poet, architect, and ultimately an engineer. In any case, he had to fight against the interference of his family, with his dogma, political intrigue, the papacy, military campaigns, and the jealousy, of course, of his competitors. Always had jealousy. Now, his father opposed him when he was 12 years old, when becoming an apprentice, first to a painter and then to Bertoldo, a sculptor. He directed a school financed by Lorenzo de Medici again, a patron of Florentine art. Again, here he's backed by the Medici's. He quickly won Lorenzo's esteem, and he also met his children, two of whom became popes later on. But he's making contacts with very powerful people, very, very wealthy people today, which helped him out through his career. He also had a number of attacks by jealous colleagues. In fact, his nose was broken once by a competitor, right? And he's constantly fighting off the insults and diminutive attacks and afflictions of other people, which is how he gets people off in our doing, because he gets sabotaged so much. In any case, a reformed priest came along, came to power, and with his crusading zeal, he threw out to the Medici family of the Florentine art world and took over. And so Michelangelo had to flee Florence and went to Bologna, where one of the great universities of the world was started around 1000, which is the oldest university in the world, in the Western world, around a long time. It's a great place to still go today, study foreign languages. There's a lot of coffee shops, bookstores, and whatnot. A lot of people sit around smoking cigarettes, drinking coffee, talking all kinds of philosophies and politics, of course. In the case, he met there the sensuous Clarissa Saffi, Carlo Bambino, another really brilliant sculpture. He's run for the first time. He met some various bankers. He met various architects, you know, the painters and whatnot, and various adversaries. And again, Arsenal did need support from wealthy people, so he had to make these connections. He also carved a Pieta, which is a brilliant piece of sculpture. Check out P-I-E-T-A. Check that out. Also, if you're interested in St. Peter's, the creation of which he helped create later on. In the case of Pieta, the sculpture was of Mother Mary holding her son Jesus, right? After his death, she's holding him, looking upon him. And just, you know, great sorrow, tremendous sorrow at his death. You can imagine. He's recreating his sorrow with his mother when he was 6 years old, or very possibly. He had a very powerful attachment to his mother, perhaps always searching for that, trying to create something in the world to exemplify the love he felt or had felt. He also got involved in the creation of St. Peter's Basilica in Vatican City. If you ever see that, it's this massive structure. One of the greatest churches in the world, no doubt. The key work of Italian Renaissance sculpture, and it's taking the start of the High Renaissance, as it were. But think of the sorrow of the Mother Mary holding her murdered son. And are these parallels again to him, what he went through? St. Peter's was designed by Bramati, Michelangelo, Maderno. If you ever go visit the room, you definitely should go see that. Really, really beautiful artworks all over the room. It's amazing. St. Peter's one of the renowned works of Italian Renaissance architecture. I was there one time for the Easter service. I think it was, it was in 2004. It was the Easter service I was there for. Really amazing. People from all over the world were there. So, it's regarded as one of the holiest Catholic shrines. Described as holding a unique position in the Christian world as the place of all churches of Christendom. In case, I think he'll create that. One of his great geniuses, he'll create it as the expression, perhaps, of his love in trying to create in the world what he felt. I felt for his mother. So, folks, welcome today, Dr. Rod Dalrymple on Mind Shock. Talking about the incredible power of love, the evolution of higher states of consciousness, and perhaps even way beyond that. Be back in a second, folks. We're from our sponsors.
Paradise Found, 2015, is a film that sparks of intrigue about the discovery of quantum field psychology. Throw in a sexy spy story, a conflict between father and son against the backdrop of NASA, and interspersed with World War II flashback combat scenes, and you'll be surprised to discover the foundation of a whole new theory of mind. Rent or buy Paradise Lost 2015 at Amazon.com and prepare for the explosive conclusion. That's Paradise Lost 2015 at Amazon.com.
If you want USA and worldwide car rentals, choose rentacar.com. Free cancellations on most bookings, no hidden charges. They are trusted by over 4 million customers. Visit our advertiser page and click on the Rent-A-Car banner.
Do you ever wonder how the mind works? The Endless Question, a film by Dr. Ron Dalrymple, shows you a new theory of mind, one that bridges the road between spirituality and science while revealing to you the laws of creativity. Things that can open up your mind to limitless possibilities. It is literally a theory that changes everything. And once you know it, you can apply it to your own life. View The Endless Question for free on Amazon Prime. The Endless Question on Amazon Prime.
This is Jack Maher from the band Feed the Kitty. It's important to support the artists you love. And you can do that and get something authentic for yourself. Rock.com has the most coveted, licensed merchandise of music, culture, and entertainment. So go to the advertiser page and click on Rock.com now.
Quantum Field Psychology, Second Edition, is an astounding book on the new theory of mind. It is the first unified field theory that incorporates the influence of the mind and emotion on physical reality, the universe, and even other minds. It actually integrates all modern psychology with quantum physics, mathematics, Western and Eastern spiritual beliefs. It's the true bridge between science and spirituality. Get your copy of Quantum Field Psychology, Second Edition, by Dr. Ron Dalrymple, on Amazon.com.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Hello, folks. Welcome back. Dr. Ron Dalrymple and Mind Shock, talking today about the incredible power of love and the evolution of varying states of consciousness. Now, bipolar disorder may stimulate creativity. Its manic episodes can include prolonged periods of elevated energy. It's been hypothesized as what Michelangelo was doing on the scaffold for several months, painting the Sistine Chapel. Was he indeed being in bipolar state? Well, possibly, right? At first, one of the first empirical studies about this was done by Nancy Andreessen in the 1970s, where she expected to find a correlation between creativity and schizophrenia. In fact, in my master's research, I was at Maryland in 82, did research on the possible correlation of so-called psychoses with creativity. We didn't find any really clear definitions there because what affects more moods, that's what she found, is a correlation between creativity and various mood disorders. He found that 80% of her sample had experienced at least one major episode of a mood disorder. That's for creative people, writers, artists, and so forth. In a follow-up study 15 years later, she found that 43% had been diagnosed with bipolar disorder and 2 had committed suicide. She wrote a book called Touch with Fire. Actually, changed that. Another author wrote that book. Touch with Fire, K. Redfield Jameson, wrote that 38% of writers and poets have been treated for a type of mood disorder, a type or another. And 89% of creative writers and artists experience intense, highly productive, and creative episodes. So you can see that these shifts in mood, the high manic state comes on, a person can knock out creative works very, very quickly. But then they might then shift afterwards into a more depressed state because they burn out their energy. So it's like this big sine wave, high period followed by deep low periods. Or hypomanic means a less elevation of manic, the same kind of depressed area afterwards. In any case, I've always found that creativity is a fascinating thing. I really love to create. I try to do it all the time. So it's not just different periods. We stay into a creative state of mind. Positive thinking, positive thought. I feed positive ideas in your subconscious mind or your superconscious mind constantly. Then a lot of stuff get depressed. Of course, being a psychologist, I guess I have another experience helping people, so I know how to counteract it. You don't allow yourself to think negative thoughts or feel negative feelings. You just stay positive all the time. You shift off that. Don't go there. Don't dwell upon it. Don't create it. shift back to, it's like mindfulness today, which has been called many things throughout the centuries. It's now called mindfulness, being aware of your thoughts. When they go negative, put them right back into positive space. You don't allow yourself to think negative or feel negative. In any case, many people do. They start going through negative thoughts and feelings, and they can take over your mind and get you off course. In any case, these episodes she found were characterized by pronounced increases in enthusiasm, energy, self-confidence, speed of mental association, fluency of thought, and elevated mood. But what if you do it all the time? What if you just stay in that state of mind all the time? Very creative, very relaxed, very positive. Every day you stay upon that plane of thought and feeling. You don't allow any negativity to hit you. You don't embrace it. You don't go there, right? It takes training. It takes practice. You stay in that place. You can constantly create. You don't need to become depressed afterwards. That wasn't really covered in the study. It was a few decades ago. This really comes from experience in dealing with this. Although mania is characterized by reckless and possibly self-destructive behavior, in milder forms like hypomania, the energy and free-flowing thinking of mania can fuel creativity. That's certainly true. To keep yourself in a very positive state of mind, a high-energy state of mind, where you exercise often, be careful what you eat, eat fruits and vegetables, low-fat proteins, nuts, beans, you know, stay off meat, that's really bad for you. No smoking whatsoever. Stay off drugs, you know, alcohol, very little, very seldom. You keep yourself, your thoughts and emotions and body as pure as you can. And exercise helps also detoxify your body. It's only important to get exercise. But in any case, were these different people in manic or hypomanic states? Well, some of them probably were because they weren't really understanding their shift in emotion. Certainly Newton would get in these very depressed, angry, paranoid states of mind because he wasn't understanding he was doing this to himself, right? So it's often been documented that brilliant people tend to be sometimes a little bit unusual, a little bit strange, but they don't need to be. They can also be perfectly normal by being relaxed and calm and at peace by discovering that inner peace within, which is really the true source of your creativity in the first place. You can relax and concentrate upon the fact there's this great energy inside you, this great light inside you. That's what really innervates everything. Light up your mind and your heart and your whole being. I mean, that heart energy is developed by drawing upon your heart. You can do this as an energy field. Go into a relaxed state of mind. I mentioned this before. Take some long, deep breaths, tense and relaxed muscles. You can count yourself down from 10 to 1, get more relaxed, more relaxed. And visualize a brilliant sun of light around your heart. Visualize that heart energy and sun energy enveloping your entire being, healing your entire being, illuminating every cell in your body. And imagine projecting outward about you, what you think about and what you're feeling influences what you project out in form. So you also want to visualize pure white light in your third eye, in your forehead, center of thought energy, the heart, of course, center of emotional energy, the magnetic fields, your third eye center of thought energy or thought electrical type fields versus magnetic fields. Say, is a parallel electromagnetism. We draw that point in quantum field psychology. Check that book out, folks. It's quite mind-shocking. So it's a film, The Endless Question. In any case, when you dwell upon those energy fields of your mind and also your heart, it greatly empowers you. You sleep deeply. You feel great all the time. You're a very positive person. Now, you will have enemies. Some people resent you. They don't like you to be positive. They sabotage you and throw negative comments at you, right? They're jealous of you and so forth. You see all the time in the business world and scientific world and so-called mental health centers that I've worked in a lot of over the years. See all kinds of personality disorders which rule those places at times. Because they rise up to a power, they may choose their power. Because they're not in touch with their love center, their heart center, or even their thought center. They get way off course, fixated upon great delusions of anger and resentment towards other people, crystallizations of thought and emotion, forming into personality disorders or other diagnoses. So it all makes perfect sense when you see it from the point of view that the mind is energy. You say it all makes sense. It's a whole new paradigm of thought and feeling to understand we are energy beings. There's a scientific basis for it. And I'd say we're also spiritual beings, so spirit and science are one. They're really the same thing. The bifurcation between them, the differentiation between them over the centuries and millennia and whatnot, is a misperception. And is a part of dualism, when in fact we are one being. So the differentiation of dualism comes from focusing upon the material world and getting caught up in the pure world and thinking that is the true reality. Well, it's just part of it. We are these highly creative beings. We're really creative way beyond what we imagine. What I'm talking about today is just barest beginning. There's so much more to this, folks, so check this out. These are really very, very powerful areas to investigate. They help you conquer life, solve your issues, overcome poverty, poor health, whatever it might be is troubling you. start studying this research, start digging into these issues, and start learning on your own. Understand that you have great creative power inside you. You have great potential inside you. So believe that. Not believe those who put you down or step on you or attack you or insult you. I think these great creative geniuses who are hurt in life, knocked off course in life, but still create great things trying to overcome the deficits and overcome it to achieve a higher level. So we all have that power. You don't need to go through that abuse in childhood to do it. We all can just, and I think mankind will, humankind will eventually learn these concepts. You know, we taught in schools, we taught from birth, everybody will know it. It'll change the whole society. Apparently it's been done before. Great sources claim that upon Earth, in four prior civilizations, we talked about in prior shows, where people were in a much higher state of elevated consciousness because they had mastered these issues. But then mankind, humankind keeps falling off that pinnacle because of the ego, and because of corruption, because of the dark force is always trying to sneak in and take control for themselves, which is the selfishness of the ego. In any case, we all have these great powers inside us. We need to work towards those folks and make that a daily consecration, a daily activity. To build yourself, you know, build yourself better every day. Think yourself having great potential, great powers inside you, you're just now discovering. So awaken to those, open up to those, and know that you can conquer your world vastly and powerfully, step by step, day by day. By believing in yourself, loving yourself, respect other people, understand they have the same powers inside them. When you see other people, see them also, these highly conscious creative beings, some of whom are starting to wake up, some of them not. If they're nasty, angry, and ugly, whatever, and you behavior and emotions, it's because they haven't woken up to these things yet. They're still controlled by the lower emotions, like anger and fear and so forth. In any case, folks, there's great stuff inside all of us waiting to be awakened and brought forth. Check out these works. Check out the Quantum Field Psychology, The Endless Question, other books, The Inner Manager, so forth. We have a new book out called Mind Games People Play, so you understand mind games people will play against you to sabotage you. Understand you have greatness inside you. It's time to discover it and wake this whole world up to overcome the darkness constantly crouching upon us. Folks, thanks a lot for listening. Take care. Dr. Ron Dalrymple and Mind Shock signing off. Talk to you next time.